To start out, just really briefly, my name is Amber Lapp, and I come to you from Menifee, California. You've never heard of it. It's okay. It is just, maybe you know of Temecula, Murrieta, that area in Riverside County, way out there in the land of no greenery or oceans in the middle of nowhere. I know. Sheep and red tile roofs. That's what we have. So I come to you from there, but my son is actually really local. He works for the North Long Beach Fire Department. So I thought, oh boy, yay, I get to go and visit him while I'm out here. And he's like, oh no, I'm in Texas. Which would have been really nice to have already known, but whatever. Today, we get to talk about square peg, round hole, ministry for kids who don't seem to fit. And I think that this is one of those workshops that either there's a lot of people at because they feel this, they have a child in mind usually, let's just get honest, or there are few people at because they think, oh, all children just fit perfectly, it's perfect all the time. And I think that one of the things that is important that we do in ministry is to be really realistic and understand that when we are doing ministry, there are going to be some children that are harder than others. When I first started in early childhood, actually as a preschool teacher, I thought this was going to be such a piece of cake because I love kids. And then when I started volunteering at the church, I was like, and I love Jesus. So of course I'm going to love all of Jesus's children, this is going to be a piece of cake. And then I was in ministry for 5 minutes and I realized that sometimes loving children is not as easy as it seems. Meeting their needs is not always as easy as it seems. Just as hard as it is maybe to believe, I am not always lovable all of the time. Loving me sometimes takes a little bit of effort. And I would assume, without pointing any fingers, there might be one or two of you in this group that is sometimes slightly hard to get along with. And when we realize that, we can have a new level of grace and understanding. So I want to start out with prayer. I'm going to let Judy finish up with the handout so nobody feels left out. Everybody get what they needed? All right, let's pray. Jesus, you are amazing. And you do not have to work to love us. You just do. And that's amazing and humbling. But we know, God, that you love us through Jesus, that we are unlovable without him, without the blood of Jesus. And we know that we are in charge of a bunch of sinners who, without Jesus, may be a little bit hard to get through to understand. So help us to keep keep on our filter between us and these kids and let us see them through your eyes. Let us love them through your heart and let us forgive them through your blood. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, so first things first, I need to know a little bit about, but you guys are going to have to get super real with me. Like I can't do this if everybody's going to be polite. Like, I need to think about what are the behaviors. I don't want to know the names. I don't want anybody to yell out, Tyler, you know. What are the behaviors that are hard to deal with in the ministry that you do? Won't sit down. What else? Talking. What else? What's that? Just being generally obnoxious, specifically during worship time, obnoxious voices. Mm. What else? What's that?
Lying.
Not waiting their turn to speak.
Blurting things out. What else?
Oh.
Yes. Is this a, yeah. Or sometimes I have to put a noise with it. And you want to pick them less, right? What else? You try looking over their heads. What else?
Nonsense.
Just speaking nonsense, like just not even trying to have a real communication, but trying to be the center of attention, trying to take the whole show over. Using their phones. Being passive aggressive. What else?
Stubborn.
What else? Just talking and not listening in general, disrespectful. What else? Is there any?
Complaining.
Complaining.
Rolling on the floor.
See, people do not understand outside of ministry how obnoxious that can be and how often it happens. But rolling on the floor is so obnoxious. It just is. Tapping on things. I'm telling you, I teach college, and it's one of the first things I tell my students. Like, I don't care if you don't do your homework, but don't tap on stuff in my class. I can't take it. Like, Can't do it. What else? Yes, any excuse to stand up. So breaking a pencil. Oh, I have to sharpen again. Oh, it broke. What do you know? It broke again. And you're like, I haven't had to sharpen a pencil in 5 years. Somehow I find it hard to believe that it's happened to you in 5 times in the last minute. What else? Unwillingness to read. Like, in general, not participate, but maybe when it's their time to read out loud, they don't want to read out loud.
Mm-hmm. Pointing the splinter in their friend's eye, not noticing the 2x4.
Yes, always looking at, there may be the most horribly behaved child, but somebody else misbehaves, and they are going to point it out. What else? Keeping their hands, always having to touch everybody all the time in some way. Here's the thing, as you're listening to these behaviors, nobody is like, what? Children do that? I've never heard of such a thing. My children have never, ever rolled on the floor or touched anybody else or spoken out of turn or refused to read or refused to participate or rolled their eyes or spoke nonsense. All of you are like, mm-hmm, yep. Oh, yeah, that one, yep. That happened 6 times yesterday. You know, like it's not a surprise. There's nothing new under the sun, right? Well, these things are all expected behaviors, but that doesn't mean we like them. And that really, honestly, in case you're afraid I'm going to say we need to just let them happen, of course not. Of course we don't want obnoxious behavior happening all the time. And it's not about me and my sensibilities, but I also need to not be annoyed all day long, right? So like where some is more serious, where children are hurting one another, that's pretty clear. But also like they need to be considerate of others and not speaking out and not making obnoxious noises and not being just generally obnoxious. So those sorts of kids are the kids that are sometimes hardest to handle. The ones who just don't seem to care that this is making you crazy. And if I'm interpreting right, that seems to be your number one issue, right? Maybe not so much the children who maybe not the children who necessarily have a learning disability or who have a special need of some way. But for you, more it's the obnoxious behaviors. So am I reading that right? I got my room right? So of course, you know, we're going to start right here, the place we don't want to start, and that's you can't see it. But if you could see it, you would be giving me this look, which is we're going to start with our heart change. The Lord says that he knows there's a way that seems right to a man, but he examines the... And out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. So we know if we want our words to be heard and our words to be tempered properly, if we want children to have a good heart for what we have to say and do, then we know we have to start with our own hearts. That's what we have to do. And that's never the way that anybody ever wants to start when they come to these workshops. They always are like, okay, so let's just talk real. I want all of the what we're going to do, and we're going to do that first. We're going to get to some of that, I promise you. But first, we have to start with our heart, because I'm telling you, if you do every trick that I know, if I right now gave you a free book with tabs for every behavior, burping, farting, swearing, lying, talking out of turn, and there was a tab for every bad behavior, first of all, it would be the biggest book there ever was. Like, nobody could even write it. You'd be like walking in with this. And secondly, it wouldn't really matter. It wouldn't really matter what was in that book if your heart is still like, I've got to teach these kids a lesson. I've got to get them in control. Children are horrible. I can't believe I have to do this ministry to Ninevites. Right? It's true. I have on more than one occasion called fifth grade Nineveh. Because there are some smelly people up in there. True or false? Come on, fifth grade. It smells bad in fifth grade. That's all there is to it. And I don't just mean like the odor, although I do. I also mean like it is hard work. Hard work. And sometimes after time starts passing, we start looking at these Ninevites the way that Jonah did. I would rather jump on a boat headed to I don't care where than towards these horrible sinners who are just going to do all of these horrible behaviors. And really, being swallowed by a whale still sounds a little bit better than hanging out with these children. And we see what happened, right? It didn't go well for old Jonah. He ended up getting barfed out on a beach somewhere, still a little bitter, still not feeling great about it. And I think when we have children who behave badly on a regular basis, it's a true test to us. I've had people come to me, and I have a teacher come to me one time just furious. She's like, I can't. We've got to tell his parents you can't bring him anymore. And I'm like, what happened? He spit in my face. I've been in this field for a long time, so I was like, and then what happened? But for her, that was the ultimate insult. Like, spitting in someone's face is the most horrible, reprehensible thing that you could possibly do. And she was like, I can't believe he would do that to me. Kids these days have no respect. When I was a child, we respected our elders. And she started in on this whole thing, and I'm like, none of the things you said are wrong. However, none of those things are going to be helpful right now. We know from Jesus' example that a spit in the face is really on the scale of horrible things that could happen to people in the name of Jesus is probably not the worst thing. In fact, you can probably right now think of at least one worse thing that's happened to you when you're serving, right? I know I can. We're not here to go with how, this is not a personal thing about the respect that you are owed or the respect that you are deserved. This is not about that. This is about looking at children who Jesus said he loved the least of them. He died for these people, and you get to meet one of God's children. If you knew that you could have an opportunity to meet the child of the king of some place that you've never heard of, because I don't want to get political today, of La La Land. There's this huge, prestigious king, and you knew that one of their children was coming to your house, and you got to meet them. Would you not be honored? It's royalty. This child who spit on you, who called you names, who uses nonsense words, who won't read out loud, who always has to touch their neighbors, is the child of the king. So valuable that Jesus died for them. And that is the way we have to enter into our care for super naughty children. Yes, they're naughty. I'm going to acknowledge it right with you. We're going to talk about how it's real and it's hard. The struggle is no joke. I get that. But we need to understand whose children we're dealing with. This is not a surprise. I said this in the last session, but I feel it bears witness. Bears mentioning again, God is not wringing his hands saying, oh my gosh, I cannot believe Fernando is in her class. What am I going to do? This ruins my whole entire plan. He knew that that child was going to be in your care on that day, and he even knew that they were going to do that. And still, he let you get up, get dressed, get there, and be there. Not only that, the same thing with this child or pack of children. Let's not ignore the fact that sometimes it's a pack. Anybody else find that they gravitate towards each other? It's like the poles of naughtiness just, and they just make one super naughty. I know this, but I'm still going to say this pack of naughties is a pack of children that belong to Christ. That's going to help me a little bit. Not perfectly. We're going to move on from here, but we're going to first start with that. that these children are here on purpose and for a purpose, and so am I. I was put here on purpose and for a purpose. And there must be something that he would have me do. Just like when Esther was so freaked out, she had to go and be like, dude, you're killing my people. And she was terrified, Queen Esther, terrified, because we've seen what had happened to her husband's wives before. Like, this is not going to be fun or easy. This is way worse than trying to get children to behave for an hour or two. This is going to a king that might have you killed and stand up for people. This is not going to go well. And then what was she told? You were put here for such a time as this. And that helps me when I'm in the middle of something that seems impossible. Just recently, I was in El Salvador, surrounded by children that speak only Spanish. And as it might surprise you, that that is not my language. And trying to communicate, and the thought went through my head, what am I doing here? Why would you send me here? I must have heard wrong, because clearly, maybe he said it in Spanish and I didn't get it, because what could I possibly do? And then God showed me that I was there to say, I see you, and God sees you. And I learned how to show that, not with words, but with love. And I'll tell you, when I left, there were children holding on me, were crying to be separated. The children saying, can I come live with you in America? Do you have a pool? No, I don't have a pool. And why are your eyes blue? That's so weird, they kept telling me through the interpreter. But I understand that feeling of, I took a wrong turn. I clearly didn't hear you right, because I'm someplace that I'm clearly not suited for. But God will show you that he did not, there's not accidents in the kingdom of God. There's not accidents. You're not on the wrong plan. You're not on the wrong path, unless he told you to go somewhere else and you didn't. We saw what happened with Jonah. But you're here. You're here for a reason, on purpose and for a purpose. So let's stop talking, let's stop entertaining, maybe I'm not supposed to be here. Let's stop entertaining that. That's what gets us in trouble, right? If I do that with my husband, I've been married for 26 years. If he does something that it makes me crazy, if I start entertaining, maybe he's doing this because I wasn't supposed to marry him, is that going to help my marriage at all? No, I can't even entertain that thought, because I'm telling you, living with another human is hard work, but it's really hard work when you're always thinking about what's a sign for me to leave. The same thing is true when you're in ministry. Is this a sign I need to leave? Is this a sign I need to leave? Is this a sign I need to leave? If you keep thinking that, you're never going to build a relationship that was meant to be built. You're here. You're here till God tells you to go somewhere else, so stay. Look at your heart. The next thing you need to do is start observing. Looking at when is this behavior happening? What is happening that right before, during, and after? So to me, that means practically keeping a journal, keeping a little pad of paper in an apron or a pocket that just, I can just write, this is when it happened. And I make up my own codes, and I never put names on notebooks because I leave things down and you don't want that kind of stuff to get found. But I just put little notes like, okay, so this obnoxious behavior is happening every time when we come inside. What you're looking for is patterns. When is this happening? Is it every time we're transitioning? Is it every time we're eating? Is it every time we're singing? Is it every time? When is this happening? Does it happen right before something happens? Is it right after they talk to this child? When is this happening? And that's a critical point, because there's something that you have to consider. And it's a hard thing to consider, but you have to do it. And I try not to do this all the time, because I think it can be counterproductive. But in this particular case, it's essential that you do. And that's, is this my fault? Is there something that's happening? Am I not setting these children up for success? Is it my schedule? Am I giving them the clear directions? If children are always acting bored, it's not because they're millennials. It's because you're being boring. It's the truth. You wouldn't, when you are bored, you don't think, I wonder if it's because I'm in generation whatever. You're thinking, why is this person so boring? That's the truth, right? If you're in a movie and you're not being entertained, you're not thinking, I wonder if I am just too entitled. You're thinking, this is a dumb movie, right? This is how kids are feeling when they're in your care. If you are always thinking that they are the problem is your children, then you're never going to take the time to say, could the problem be with what I'm doing? Am I engaging? Am I prepared? First of all, children can smell fear and unpreparedness from a mile away. They know if you're just being an amateur. Don't call it in. Don't phone it in. You go in and you go in prepared the same way that you would expect from your pastor. Could you imagine if your pastor came in 20 minutes late to church? Everybody's been done singing for a while. You guys are just sitting around like waiting for it to start. And he comes up and he's like,
oh, hey. I do have my mocha
cafe latticino right here. I had to stop. I couldn't help being late. And where were we today? What was the lesson today? What are we doing? Oh, yeah. Okay, where is that again? Okay, so you guys just talk, and I'm going to look really quick and get prepared right now. I'm going to cut a couple things out, make my PowerPoint real quick, and we'll get going. Would you tolerate that from your pastor for one time? Even one time, you'd be like, clearly he's not walking with Jesus, right? But we show up that way for kids all the time. We say, oh, but I have a job. Oh, but I have this, but I have that. That's right. But when you were doing ministry, you are a minister. Get it? Like you would expect your minister to behave towards you. You come prepared. You come ready. You find a way to do it. And if you know you're not going to be able to do those things, you make sure somebody else is there for you. You don't be like, oh, well, too bad. I guess I'll just show up unprepared. Could you imagine if your pastor did that for you? They would never do that. If they're not able to prepare, they find somebody that is equally qualified or more qualified to take their place. They don't just pick somebody up off the street and be like, okay, well, I know you used to be an usher, but now you need to preach. They would never do that. They find somebody who's qualified and who's ready to go and who's prepared. And that's what we need to be looking at too. Is it how are we treating our responsibility? What can we do that would make a change? What can we do better? What can we do more exciting? Can we do something in a different order? Are we making children sit too long? Have you ever been in something that made you sit too long? Don't say right now. When you have to sit too long, it is hard. Have you ever been in a situation where you're like, I think I have to go to the bathroom? I do. I have to go to the bathroom. Have you ever done that? I have. I'll just tell you the truth right now. I'll be like, oh, yep, got to go to the bathroom. I need to get up and stretch. When I was on that airplane, I was just like, oh, my gosh. I've been sitting still for 9 hours. My feet are going to fall off. I can't sit here anymore. We weren't flying first class. So I'm in very tight quarters with lots of people that are not altogether familiar with and never this familiar with. And I'm thinking, I got to get up and get out. And I'm thinking of excuses. I always be careful with fluids. There's too much information. But if you're on a 9-hour flight, you're not chugging water because you don't want to have to get up on that plane. My hips all the way back to the back while everybody watches you and then all the way back. So I'm careful, but I'm still thinking, why do I need to find a reason to stand up because I'm going to have to go over people. That's always a problem, all of the things. Now imagine you're 6 or 9, and to you, 1 hour is a very long time. Half an hour is a very long time. You're thinking, what could make me stand? I have to go to the bathroom. I need to sharpen my pencil again. Because children were not really created to sit still. You know that's not developmentally appropriate, right? Like, research is now showing, like, even in schools, and all of us old school people, we've been rolling our eyes at this, at the teachers who bring in the balls for children to sit on. But the truth of the matter is studies are showing that the more children get up and move, the more they learn. In fact, children learn better from their feet than their seat every day of the week. So instead, we're like, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down. And if we're saying that to a lot of children, we know that the problem is with our lesson. And if we're saying it to one child, we're thinking, oh, this child is telling me they need to stand up. How can I make them, give them a way that they could stand up more often within my boundaries? Can I put them in charge of passing things out? Can I put them in charge of holding things up? Can I put them in charge of something where they're still following the rules, but they're able to do the thing that they need to do, which is stand up? When you have to sit, when you feel like you need to stand, it is the worst. When you feel like you have to stand, when you feel like you need to, you know what I mean. When you're the wrong side of the door, no matter what, you feel like you've got to be where you got to be, right? And as adults, I don't like people telling me where I need to do what. right? I don't like it. On the mission trip one night, I went and whispered to my pastor, okay, I'm going to go to bed. I'm super tired. And he's like, no, I want you to stay up for a meeting. And I'm telling you, I was like, and then he said, and prayer. And then I'm like, I think I'm not allowed to be mad about this. But I was thinking, like, I want to go to bed when I want to go to bed. I'm more than 20. I want to go to bed when I want to go to bed, right? But for children, we expect that we can tell them when to stand up, when to sit down, when to go to the bathroom, when to get a drink of water, when they're allowed to do everything. And we have to expect that there's going to be at least one child that just can't help it. They got to push back against it. So how can I help them? How can I help them use that energy in a positive way so they don't have to be in trouble? Because my goal when I am doing ministry is not to teach them how to sit still. That's a teacher job that somebody else has to teach them. I don't have to teach them that. I got to teach them that Jesus loves them. And are they going to feel it better when I'm yelling at them, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down? Or am I going to be able to communicate that better when I'm able to say, oh, man, you were so helpful to me today. What a blessing you are in my life. What's the difference? What feels more like love? And we have to look at that all the time. But first, we've got to observe, when is this happening? What are they trying to say? Are they talking in nonsense language or shouting out unexpectedly because they're having to wait too long for a turn? Are they doing it because they don't have self-control? If it's because they're having to wait too long for a turn, maybe you need to look at how your system is. Maybe you need to do smaller groups or something. If it's one child that really just can't, doesn't have a lot of self-control, one thing that I try to do is I have like a bean bag, or if they're old enough, I'll give them a whiteboard with a marker so they could write down the things that they want to tell me later. And then they come to me with their list, even a piece of paper and a pencil. Write it down, write it down, write it down. And then I will have a meeting with them, and I will hear all the things that they want to say. That's okay. Like, being heard is a basic human need. And maybe the child is shouting out to you all the time is not being heard. Maybe they're being told to be quiet all the time because they're obnoxious humans. That's the truth. The truth is there are some obnoxious humans in this world, and those children do not get listened to. So if only one adult in their life is going to listen to them, who should it be? Me. Why? Because I'm saying, follow me, I'm following Jesus, just by showing up, by praying with them, by opening a Bible with them. If there's only one person that will listen to them while they're being obnoxious, it's going to be me. It's going to be in an appropriate time. I can't interrupt my time that I'm trying to do this, but I would love to listen to you. Will you please write that down so we don't forget? Sometimes when I have no things, like I'll give them a beanbag to hold. This, remember, this is for you to give to me as like a ticket to tell me the rest of your story. Or sometimes I'll just, with older kids, I'll say, will you please cross your fingers like this? This will help you remember that you're going to tell me. Or I'll cross my own fingers and I'll say, okay, see this? I'm not uncrossing my fingers until you tell me all about your trip to Disneyland, because I do want to hear it. It's not appropriate now, but this sounds like a great story. I can't wait to hear it. Have you ever had somebody who didn't want to hear what you had to say? It's frustrating, especially if you're like trying to get a special exemption or something. You're like, yeah, but there's a special, and they're like, nope, sorry, that's the rules. But I, nope, sorry, it's the rules. I had that experience. My son had an anaphylactic shock reaction to something. We didn't know what. His whole face was swollen. His throat swelled up. And so we jumped him in the car and drove him to the hospital. Like, we couldn't have gotten a it couldn't have happened. It was faster to just go. Well, it just so happened that a few months later, we have Kaiser. And we didn't go to a Kaiser hospital, so we got the call. You need to pay for it because you should have gone to the doctor, a Kaiser doctor. I'm all, and I'm trying to explain, and she's like, sorry, that's policy. And I was like forgetting that I was a Christian woman at some point. I felt the tears rise up in my eyes, and I felt the swears rise up in my heart. And I'm like, listen, lady. And then I realized, like, okay, I am a Christian lady. I cannot say any of the things I want to say. And I finally said, I don't think you understand that we called 911 and the 911 operator told us to do that. And she goes, oh, I didn't understand that. Okay, well, thank you very much, and hung up. I was all, such a simple thing. But I was getting so frustrated because I had a valid reason for going to this emergency. And to me, it was valid. To her, she was thinking of her policies. That was her job. She wasn't doing anything wrong. She was doing her job. She had a list of people to call who were crazy, not using network hospitals users, and she was calling. Her job was to get the money from me. My job was to get my son to stay alive. I understand that's a much smaller scale of my job is to take off my shoe and make everybody smell it, which maybe one of your second graders might do. But to them, that's a very important thing. And if you don't want to hear why, then you are frustrating them. And what does the Bible say about causing our children to have great frustration, right? Not causing our children to have frustration, not stressing them out. We have to observe and we also need to listen. What's going on? What's happening right now? Are you okay? Do you feel okay? I notice you haven't been wanting to sit down. What's going on? Is there somewhere else you'd rather be? Maybe there really is. You never know what the story is. And then identify what is it that they need. What is their need? What time do I need to be done? Okay, we got this, you guys. We're on this. We got this. Identify what is it that needs to happen. What is the behavior that I want to happen? What is the behavior that is the worst? A lot of times when I go to people who and I'm consulting, because sometimes I'll do like the super nanny for classrooms and they'll come in and watch for a while and help out. And one of the things that I'll say, so what is it that you want to happen? And they'll be like, I don't want the hit anymore. I don't want them to speak out of turn. I don't want them to do this. I don't want them to this. I don't want this to happen. The truth of the matter is you've got to pick one thing, just one, so you can have a success and they can have a success. Because just as frustrated as you are, they are. That's the truth. Have you ever, like, known that you were doing something wrong and you could not stop yourself from doing it wrong? Maybe pronouncing a word and you know, like, this is not how you pronounce it, but you keep saying it wrong. Like, what if you were trying to fix your whole entire vocabulary? You gotta just focus on the one thing. And for our children, if we try to say, change everything, that's like trying to do a home improvement project where you just do the whole house all at the same time. And let me just tell you, that is a really bad idea. That's what we're doing right now in my house, and it is horrible. We've been actually doing a little at a time, but there gets to be a point when you have no place where you can sit without dust or construction equipment, and you just get more agitated and more agitated. You have to have little tiny successes so you can keep on going. And the same is true for children's behavior. They need to have small successes so they can keep on going, and frankly, you need them too. Because if you are feeling the kind of frustration that I have had with really rotten children, I start questioning that I can. But when you get that little victory, the 5 minutes without shouting out, this is fantastic. So I'm going to make a goal of what I want to see happen, and I'm going to try really hard to make it, and I'm going to need to do that with a step four, which is a plan. Now, this plan that I'm going to make, like I said, is going to need to be really realistic. Not, this child will not say any bad words for an entire hour, but this child will not say bad words for the first 15 minutes. 15 minutes, we're going to have swear-free. I know it, and I'm going to communicate that to the child. You and me are going to make a bargain. I'm not going to say I'm okay if you swear the rest of the time. That's a bad idea. But I am going to say, hey, I am going to work with you. Every time this amount of time passes and you have not said any swear words, I am going to come over, and we're going to have a secret handshake, fist pump, acknowledgement. With some younger ages, a sticker, but with older children, probably not going to work as much as just, every time you go 5 minutes, I'm going to give you a high five because I'm so impressed. And maybe I won't communicate it with them if my goal is kind of a secret one. My secret goal is to keep them from me having to say, sit down. And so maybe I'll just walk up and I'll just be like, I've been noticing you've been sitting really well. Do you know that we're going to be standing up in 5 minutes? You've got this. You can do this for five more minutes. You can do this for five more minutes. You've got this. And keep on doing that and freaking out every time they do a good job. Could you imagine how much faster you would learn something if somebody was so pleased with your progress instead of so disappointed in your failures? We're going to communicate with them the way that we want them to do it. We're going to catch them being good. It's not that much different from dog training, right? You don't beat a dog every time they don't sit. As soon as they sit, you give them a treat. You did it! Oh my gosh, you sat down, and the dogs are like, what did I just do? I love it. And they stand up, they're so excited. And then the next time they sit down, you're like, oh my gosh, you sat, good job. Oh my gosh, I did it. All right. And you just keep doing this until pretty soon you don't need the treat anymore. You just say sit down, and they sit, and everybody's happy, right? It's not that much difference. And please forgive me if anybody wants to be offended that I'm doing child training and dog training parallels, but It's not that much different, honestly. As soon as they start seeing that they get you are pleased with them, that you're happy with the work that they're doing, they're going to want to do more. You just have to find ways, and you're going to have to plan for it. It doesn't happen on the fly. You have to be praying about it and thinking about it throughout the week. And you're going to need to not just stumble. This doesn't accidentally happen. You have to purpose it. And then you're not going to do it by yourself. You need to collaborate. If you work with other people, everybody needs to be on the same page. And that sometimes is going to be hard because you're going to have that old school person that's like, children just need to have respect. I don't need to reward them for being good. That'll make them reward junkies. And I just want them to behave because that's the rules. You're going to have to remind them about how Jesus is so incredibly kind and gracious and to whom much is given, much is expected. And you're going to have to get on the same plan. So everybody that notices that this child has not sharpened their pencil in the last hour is going to be impressed. And we're all going to be impressed. If there's parents that need to be brought in, we're going to talk to them about the same thing. We're all going to be impressed. When you are frustrated and you use a word like crickets, we are going to be impressed that you did not say all of the other options of words that you might say. Good choice in frustrated words. Good for you. All of us are going to be impressed. Parents are going to be impressed. I'm going to be impressed. We're all going to be impressed. We're going to collaborate. And we're also going to seek help. Here's the thing. There's at least one of you and probably a big handful of you that the problem is bigger than anything that I could address right now. I've got a general audience. I've got 40 some odd minutes total. I think I've got like 5 minutes left or something ridiculous like that. I'm running out of time. I'm not going to be able to specifically deal with your behavior. But we can collaborate. We're brothers and sisters. You got a friend in Menifee now. Now when people say you've never heard of Menifee, you'd be like, I got a friend in Menifee. And you can Facebook message me. You can email me. And you can be like, I've got this child. He's making me question my own salvation. I need a priest and some holy water. Come quick. And we will talk about it. We'll reason it out. We'll collaborate. This is something that I love doing. Like, I love getting to the bottom of naughty child behavior. We will work on it. We'll work on it together. Judy, my assistant, will get it first, and she'll be like, I don't know, and she'll send it to me, and we'll collaborate. We'll get it. We will figure it out. Or you will identify somebody who is amazing at this, and you will take them to lunch and say, what is your secret? You are amazing. You're like the child whisperer. What can I buy from you from Starbucks that will make you tell me all the things? And they will tell you, and you will go and you will observe somebody who loves what they do and say, can I come and watch you do your magic? Because I would like to learn. You need to collaborate and stop thinking. And I know there's at least one of you that is like me who feels like saying I can't do it is the same as saying I don't trust in God, and that's not true. You are not a bad Christian or a bad minister because you don't know what you're doing and you're frustrated and something is hard. You are not. God made us in community so we could help each other. And there's nothing wrong. There is no shame in saying, I'm in over my head. This child I dream about getting, like I keep dreaming that they'll get, their father will get transferred or they'll get chicken pox or something dreadful will happen so that I don't have to do this anymore. I'm considering getting on a boat and heading to Nineveh because it sounds better than what I'm doing here. There's no shame in admitting that to somebody and letting them pray with you at the very least, because we know God already knows the answer. He's already figured it out. And he may have put somebody in your life, if not me, then somebody you're sitting right next to, maybe somebody you'll be sitting next to after getting your delicious tacos and sitting down, and you're going to ask people, what do you do well? What do you love? And you're going to get their information. And then when you're having trouble, you're going to say, will you pray for me? Because this is really hard. I want to quit today. Will you just pray for me? Or I have a child and this is what they're doing and I don't know how to make them stop. And here's the story. I've observed. I've made a plan. I stuck with it. This is what always I'll say, have you tried this? And people go, tried it. Have you tried this? Tried it. Have you tried this? Tried it. I'm like, you've tried 18 things and you've had them for 2 weeks. You haven't tried anything consistently. It takes a long time to unlearn bad behavior because it took a long time to learn it. It takes weeks and weeks. If you haven't tried something that you think probably should work, if you haven't tried it for 5 weeks, you haven't tried it. Try it for a while. It takes a little while to figure it out. But collaborate, ask. You can say, am I being unreasonable? And I'll tell you the truth. Like, don't ask me that question if you don't want to hear the answer, because a lot of times I'll write, yes, you're being completely unreasonable. This problem is you. I'll put a little happy emoji next to it so you know I'm being nice. But the truth is that we have to have people in our lives that will be honest with us about stuff like that. We have to. We have to have, you need to identify somebody who knows you really well and can know, can see through when you're telling them a bunch of baloney about how it's everybody else's fault and have them say, yeah, but I know you. You stayed up all night watching This Is Us. You weren't ready at all. Okay. And then this is the part about persevering. You need to push through. You need to push through. Now, I had to go fast in the last session, so if you've been in both, then just take this for both. Sometimes there are times we need to say, you know what, the problem is that I need a break. And that's okay. And I used to be, when I was in vocational ministry, I used to hate when people would say they're taking a break because I know the truth. They're never coming back, and that's really what happens. It does. So I'm taking a break means see you never. Smell you later. That's all that's happening. There's no actual, there's no end to it. But if you recognize you actually need a break, you get somebody who you're accountable to, who will hold you accountable, who will give you you work out a time frame of how much time rest you need, and then you come back when you're done. And if God tells you, people ask me all the time, well, how do you know if you are called? Maybe I'm not called to this anymore. Well, has God called you to something else? Because I'm pretty sure that God did not call you to the ministry of sitting on your couch. So what did he call you to instead? If he called you to something instead, then you get to pray about it, get witnesses, you know, like get some fellowship going and ask people what they think, get some discernment going there. That might be a possibility. But if you're like, I'm called to quit and not do this anymore, maybe you're called to rest for a time and then go back. Maybe you're called, there's lots of things I'm not trying to put on you, like, some of you have been doing this, like I said, since Moses. You were Moses' Sunday school teacher. It's time for a break. You get to take a break. You're tired. You ran the race. That's cool. But for those of us who are pretty sure that we're quitting because we feel discouraged, because we don't have what we need, we know that God already promised he will provide for all our needs according to his riches in Christ's glory. So if you feel like you don't have what you need, maybe you need to figure out how to get that. And having somebody who is who can be straight with you, who can pray with you, and it can help you seek what you're supposed to do next, can help you confirm what God's telling you. And absolutely, there is mercy, and there is rest for you. We know that. And sometimes you do just need a break or some perspective, or frankly, a vacation or a trip to Starbucks. Like, those things are all cool. At some point, though, you need to look and see, am I quitting because I am called to quit, or am I quitting because I'm tired? And then looking at what the difference is and seeking God in that. So, and then you're going to start from the top. Because here's the funny thing about kids, is something that works, your plan that you put together, what you're going to do, and you collaborated and you made all the plans, that will work for a while, and then suddenly it will suddenly not work anymore. It's like antibiotics, man. You just can't be on antibiotics all the time. At some point you get a resistance, you got to try something new. That's how that works. And you're going to have to start from this top. You'll have to observe again. You'll have to come up with identify what are the problems, what do I need to do. You'll need to collaborate. What should we do? How do we do this together? You'll need to, persist. That's what's going to have to happen. It's a cycle. And if you think that you're ever going to get a classroom of all children behaving perfectly all the way along, just look at your senior pastor and ask if all his congregants behave perfectly all the time. He will probably tell you there are several of you out there on Facebook in the middle of the sermon. There's some people who are sitting there making their grocery list, thinking about burritos instead of the sermon. There's some of them that are sitting there high on drugs, right there in the, that's your pastor who has a whole class of people. He has them every week, and he still can't get them all to behave all the time. You're not gonna get that goal. But you can get it to a place where God's love can go out and Christ's message can go in, and children can know that they are seen and loved and known by God. And that's a wonderful privilege. It's a wonderful thing to be able to do that. It is my privilege to be able to be here for you today. So thank you so much. I think I'm ending on time-ish.